The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. This content is created in partnership with our sponsor, Zurich Australia Limited, ABN 92000010195, AFSL 232510, and is limited to publicly available information. Before acting on any general advice, you should consider whether appropriate and obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license and does not provide any financial advice or services or endorse any general advice. If a PDS or IM exists, you should obtain a copy and review it thoroughly before making a decision.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rox from Ensemble, and I'm thrilled to be bringing to you the podcast Engine Room, that's devoted entirely to the practices or the business of financial advice. Over the course of the next many months, we're going to be interviewing Australia's best independent boutique advice firms, their practice managers, their GMs, on what environment is conducive to being a best practice, how they keep talent, how they attract talent, and what the future of financial advice is. It's the Engine Room podcast. Welcome aboard.
Zurich is proud to be supporting this episode. The Zurich and OnePath Advisor portal is more efficient than ever before, giving you access to two leading brands with three highly sought-after products, underpinned by two powerful underwriting engines, all with one simple sign-on, making it easier for you to do business and perform at your best.
Hello and welcome to the Engine Room podcast. Yet again, I've got a real treat today. I've got some guests that have flown all the way in from Adelaide, the home of Hagues, but that's another story. And I've got another guest that's really unique because yet again, we've got a business that's been going for 50 years. So it's going to be very exciting. And I'd like to start by just reading off the first line of their website. And that'll give you the tone of sort of the lightheartedness they have around themselves and what they like to project for not only their own team members, but the way they operate. So the 80s were an exciting time in Australia. It saw the birth of Pac-Man, shoulder pads, post-it notes, and a little family business in its second generation that has evolved to become Calder Wealth Management. And with that, I'd like to welcome Ben Calder and Ivana Sinzari to the microphone. Welcome.
Thanks, Roxy.
Thank you. Hello.
And I did the Hagues joke just to kick it off because, Ivana, maybe enlighten the world to the truly horrific self-help task that you've given yourself.
I'm going for 1,000 days, no chocolate. I'm currently at 820 days, which means I haven't had chocolate for over 2 years.
So the home of Hagues in Adelaide, no chocolate for 2 years. So we're hoping that we hope there's big celebrations for you. And the celebrations for your 1,000 days probably might be almost as big as, Ben, your celebrations recently for Calder Wealth turning 50 years old. How are they?
Really good. I mean, we're just getting started. So this year is, you know, it's 50 years this year. So we've got quite a few events planned over the year with the team and for our, you know, the broader client group to say thank you. And so we started with a video and we got my father in to cut a movie, which was fun. And I think they're putting together a bloopers reel at the moment when apparently there's a lot more to watch in the bloopers than there was in the final cut.
And I've seen the video, and if you want a good look at Ben Calder throughout the ages, with all the fashion faux pas from the 80s, 90s, noughties, and to now, then it'll be a well worth the thing. But I suppose it'd be good for the audience just to get a bit of a feel for yourselves individually. Yes, you've been going a long time, but this is Calder 2.0 or 3.0, and we're all about a growth platform. And we were only talking earlier, Ivana, about, you know, what you guys are looking to achieve, you know, in the next 2 or 3 years, which is pretty significant growth. So maybe start with yourself, Ben. When did you get into the business and what's been your journey to where you are right now?
I guess I've always had exposure to the industry growing up. Dad was an advisor for a long time. I probably didn't think I would ever sort of go down that route. But strangely enough, in probably 93, I started with Norwich Union in what they used to have is like an internship in the life company, and you work across the different areas. And I ultimately ended up, one of the areas was Norwich Advisor Services, where we looked after all the life agents, and I sort of thought it looked like they were having a pretty good life at the time in the early 90s, and I chose to move into that path from there.
But you did spend a little bit of time in the United Kingdom, is that right?
Yeah, yep. So started as an advisor, lived in Melbourne for a while, moved back to Adelaide, and then had an opportunity to go work in the UK, work with National Australia Bank based out of London for a while, sort of with their as their financial planning manager in London under the Clydesdale Bank brand. And that was brilliant. I had an amazing time, learned a lot of what to do and probably even more of what not to do.
And when did you move back to Australia?
About 2001.
And that coincided with you moving sort of your feet underneath the family business, or was there an interim?
Yeah, no, that was I'd been away. So before moving away, the Call to Wealth business as it is now was predominantly a life insurance advisory business. I had a financial planning business, so they used to sort of refer their clients. Some, you know, you'd get a call from dad and say, do you know what an allocated pension is? Sure. So
this is in the same town, just to rewind.
Yeah.
So you're in Melbourne or Adelaide at the time?
This was in Adelaide.
Right.
Yeah.
So your father was referring sort of more technical, holistic planning to you, and you were utilising his services for insurance. Is that correct?
Yep, absolutely. Okay. And that sort of grew really quickly and probably was getting pretty serious, where sort of the partners in Call to Wealth at the time were like, you know, you should bring your business in and come in and work with us. And that's why I thought I want to go to the UK and work away, because sort of once I sort of embed myself here, you know, I'm locked in, sort of thing. So, so that's sort of how the financial planning bit started. And then on coming back from the UK, we'd sort of negotiated a deal, I guess, while I was away. And when the sort of deal looked right enough, I came back, merged in the business that I had still running in Adelaide, in with those guys, and we sort of set out a bit of a plan for their succession over the coming 10 plus years.
Fast forward to 2024, has all that succession occurred smoothly? You know, you are the CEO of the business as we speak, I'm assuming so, but has that all played out the way that you'd hoped?
Better.
Oh, wow.
I guess because we had such a long time to transition the clients and work through all of that, the other guys were in no mad rush to move into retirement, et cetera. So I bought the other partners out roughly about 8 years ago. You know, we still have all the clients that they sort of personally looked after, and their next generation, and possibly moving into third generation of those families now.
So G3 is the terminology, isn't it? And a slow handover was sort of sounded like the key to the success, was it?
It was just safe, you know, safe. And I think for clients, it was pretty seamless. You know, other partners and I sort of sat in meetings together, and we probably did that for a while. We could have transitioned it much faster if that was the aim, but, you know, we sort of just were all happy to work together. We all brought different skill sets to the table. So it was really quite complimentary, and it's pretty good to be working with your old man. I had a ball doing that. No regrets whatsoever.
So you've spoken about working with your father, but you're a father yourself. Is that correct?
Yes.
And how do you balance it?
Not well, probably. I do the best I can. I've got sort of teenage kids, 17 and 14.
Oh, I've got that. That's an up. It's some days are better than others.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, you think when they're little, it gets easier, and obviously it's getting worse. But they're really sporty kids. I sort of, you know, I have my kids for a really good chunk of time. And so managing them, what they want to do, the business, you know, they're the priorities. There's not much room for much else, to be honest, the last few years, but I wouldn't change any of it.
Oh, perfect, perfect. And Ivana, when did you enter into this world, the colder world? And maybe what were you doing prior to that?
So the Call to Wealth, I joined Call to Wealth Management 3 years ago. March is my anniversary month. So it's been three.
Well, we can do a performance review during this podcast.
Yeah, sure. Let's go
live. We're live streaming it.
I'm feeling pressure.
Tell me. I joined Quarter Wealth 3 years ago. No regrets joining. But I started in the industry back in 2002 when I realized I didn't want to be at uni anymore, much to my mum's disappointment. And I didn't pick the industry. I just picked a job, and that was with Colonial First State. After that, I worked in Commonwealth Bank in their financial planning division, coordinating a team of financial planners. When my time there ended because I was going to have a baby, I finished up at Commonwealth Bank. I moved into licensee land. I had lots of fun there, as I have in all of my roles that I've worked in. I then spent some time in smaller one advisor practices, just in a support role, in between having kids. After that, I decided to actually have a break from the industry, and I spent a couple of years working in a very popular and busy hospitality business in Adelaide, which has over 100 staff. I was doing their work health and safety, and then I moved into people and culture, and that role for me was invaluable. I learned a lot. I met a lot of awesome people working with such a diverse group of people, and having difficult conversations and lots of conversations, I think, set me up for this role as practice manager with Calder Wealth. 4 kids later, my sister got in touch and said that Ben Calder was looking for a practice manager, because he reached out to her first.
Didn't know you yet.
Well, you know what's funny about this story is normally the CEO goes, yeah, we went through an exhaustive sort of, you know, search and whatnot. But in fact, Ivana, you've been looking after hundreds of financial planners. So you sort of were interviewing him the other way, going, yeah, I've seen what everyone else is doing. What's so special about you? Yeah. And I suppose I'm going to ask the question. Yeah. So what made you join?
What made me join?
You joined Calder. You had visibility in your previous life of all the other planners, everyone doing things. What drove you to wanting to join with Calder Wealth?
I think the professionalism, everything was organized. It was a business, and you could feel that it was a business. It wasn't just an advisor in an office with the support staff. Yeah, it was structured, organized, and it just felt right.
And moving on, from, you know, 3 years from here, and we're going to talk a bit about sort of when we change gears about what your role is now and how you've grown that. But I was just really interested. I know you took a breath when I asked what made you join, because I saw Ben immediately turn around and give you the stare, the 90-mile stare. But I think you completely summed it up. You know, this is an Engine Room podcast. What we're trying to encourage is the evolution of professionally run practices that allow financial advisors to achieve their goals and their client goals. So inadvertently, you've probably nailed the brief. And you mentioned you've got quite a few young kids, and so you must be very, very good at time management. And I know that because you sent through one of the most detailed answers to all of the questions I've ever had in my life. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, having 4 small children that are all in primary school still is very busy. My husband is self-employed and I help him in his business, and I have other interests that I volunteer my time with as well, on top of work and kids. And we're heavily involved in Surf Life Saving, and I help run a language school in Adelaide. So I think I just function better when I keep busy, and just forces me to be really organized and on top of everything.
Oh, thank you. And thank you very much for sharing your story there, guys. And what I'd love to hear now is where we're at with Calder now. I'd love to get a bit of a feel. So for everyone listening out there who go, that makes a bit of sense. I also don't like chocolate, of which there'll be none. But the good news is in 100 and something days, we're back on. And figuring out, how do you make good with all of those promises to yourself and your advisors? So can I ask maybe, Ivana, in relation to how you run the business, where you organise the advisors, maybe give us a bit of a feel for do you run a pod structure? I think, Ben, we've spoken before, you run a diamond structure, which I might get you to talk about either of you to talk about the diamond structure. So who would like to go first? So regardless, because it's actually a really cool structure from, is it the Herbis?
Yeah, Herbis.
Herbers, yeah. So we might include a link, Kieran, to the Herbers website there, because, you know, I've heard this story off mic before, and it's a cracking structure that I think a lot of people should look at. So over to you. What's the diamond structure, and then how do you implement it?
I think, look, traditionally, as we've grown from being a smaller practice to, I guess, a medium-sized business, sort of with the resources, you sort of stack them in a silo type arrangement. So, you know, you have an advisor and they have some admin support or a CSO and then maybe a para planner, et cetera. As we've sort of grown, we only moved to diamond team structures last year.
Great. Yep. What were you previously, if you don't mind me asking?
Individual silos.
Okay. Yeah. So the classic pod system that a lot of the listeners would be familiar, because I often say to pod or not to pod, but I now added a third derivation.
Yeah. So it's really like just, you know, before it was one big pod and now we've broken them up into three diamond team structures. Mm-hmm. So we've got advisors in there that obviously complement each other. They now have associates who sit behind them to do a lot of the work that, you know, they need to learn to become advisors over time and support those and to leverage those advisors. So they work teams within a team, if you like, and those resources can be shared between diamonds, et cetera. And then sort of management, we have sort of offshoring services. They all operate as shared services that support the advice teams.
Okay, so you've got the three advice teams, you've got a shared services for sort of output. And can I ask, is there a lead advisor in each one of those three teams?
Yes.
Okay.
Under the Herbers model effectively is that sort of, you know, those you have sort of a senior lead and then lead advisors and with growth and, I guess, career progression for the advisors is for them to have the opportunity to move to a senior lead where they maybe run their own team at some point. Probably the other thing that we find supports it is career pathing, and I think we're going to talk about people and culture and stuff
Absolutely.
Today. But running those structures, those formal structures, we can sort of see how much capacity we have. So we know when we need to hire next and we can really map out a pathway for those younger university grads, if you like, that want to be part of our industry. And so we can show them a pathway with timelines and we know when they're going to get there based on those structures.
I often think about people entering the industry, and I think, Ivana, you mentioned that your first couple of jobs are in smaller or subscale businesses. Great people, but still, as someone who's young who wanted to learn the ropes, it's sort of quite limiting, and you probably found yourself having to make it up a bit as you go along, like a lot of people. But entering into this quite rigid structure where there is hierarchy, where hierarchy as far as tasks, but flat management as far as communication,
yeah, that's right.
I think is the vibe. So the questions I then had to ask yourself, Ivana, is how do you know when you get to capacity? And just something practically, so does that mean if I'm a client, and in a second I'm going to ask a bit about the types of clients you've got, do I then have a meeting with more than one person in the meeting, or is it more than one person in my team to implement?
You've got more than – or the client will have more than one person in their team. So generally they'll meet with the advisor, and after that meeting the advisor will then meet with the associate, talk about what happened – or what the meeting was about and what the objective is, and then the associate will formulate the strategy and then send off the request. And then we've got the client associate in the team who does, I guess, the liaison with between the client and the associate and implementing all their work. So
the client will get correspondence from the people in their team. And when they come on board as a new client, do they get told that they've got a portfolio of people in your group to look after them?
Absolutely.
And that's part of your sort of unique sales, your position piece with them, saying that, you know, because ultimately, as an advisor of many years, clients love talking, but they also understand that the 2 hours that I've just taken about an advisor is 2 hours that someone else is not utilizing them, and I might be that someone else quite often, right? So having that scalability is probably, very relevant. And how do you know when they get to capacity, Ivana?
When the advisor gets to capacity the team?
Yeah, the team.
When the team gets to capacity. Well, we've got a metric that each team needs to have, and that's what we think is
well, the capacity. Up. What's your metric?
Households.
Households. Okay, so let's answer that question with how many households they have, and then I wouldn't mind asking you, Ben, just the sorts of clients that you've got today, and where your aspirations are as far as the types of clients.
I might just on that with the households. So under a silo structure, for example, we think probably about 120 from the types of clients we look after per advisor is about they're capping out. You know, at around
and that's
that.
Typically a couple of meetings a year, or what's the
yeah. Difference? So usually, sort of that would be one formal where sort of all cash flow modeling's redone, everything, all the boxes are ticked, all objectives revisited. But yes, there typically will be another meeting for some other. You know,
there's ad hoc things that come up as well.
Absolutely. So, but then sort of when we move to that diamond team structure and you put an associate into a team, so two lead advisors with an associate should easily be able to go to sort of 150 plus households per advisor.
But what do they look like? What's a client look like?
For us, ideal client for us is mass affluent, pre-retiree, basically. So,
do you mind if they're self-employed or salaried?
No, we we have some advisors who sort of have an accountancy background and they're probably better to work with the SMEs. And a lot of our advisors, as time has gone on, they get more familiar with working with different subgroups of that category, if you like. So it's pretty easy to match a new client we're onboarding with the right advisor that understands intimately what their issues are.
I just want to drill down on that point. So you mentioned we're onboarding them. So the client is onboarded by the overall company. There's obviously a lead advisor in play, but at some stage you might say, well, that particular client, it might have a bunch of complex tax affairs, might be best served potentially by one of your other business units. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. So how does the horse trading work?
It's really, I guess, that's probably another way of managing capacity. So as those associates are coming through, and Ivana was talking about before, the associates do take a lot of that work away from the lead advisors, but they also, as they're moving through PY, those associates are going into those meetings as well, so as part of their development.
Oh, great. Yep.
And ultimately, they're going to pick up a pool of families to look after and still work in that team structure, but that's how they'll sort of step out into being an advisor in their own right and managing their own client groups.
And knowing your business, you're a multidisciplinary practice as well. So not only are the clients being serviced for financial planning, but they've got other sort of disciplines as well. Maybe explain how they fit into the overall picture.
So as I said earlier, the business sort of was really founded on life insurance advice. So that's still a huge part of our business. There's probably never been a greater need for it in our industry than what there is now. So we're still very focused on that. So for those clients that accumulate a pre-retirees that still will do all that in-house. We also do lending, mortgage broking and asset finance, all that stuff in-house. So the clients can sort of get that holistic solution, I guess, to everything they're trying to achieve. So those other sort of with insurance and with debt, for example, they sort of sit in shared services and go in and support those advice teams as they need the help.
So team, multidiscipline practices. Now, I ran a multidiscipline practice for nearly 20 years. So that's the broking, the accounting, the financial planning. What I found was that definitely the clients felt like it was all part of it. But what I'm interested is how do you coordinate those other disciplines from the back end? You know, how do they talk to each other? Do you include them in your daily huddles or whatever? You know, maybe I don't mind who answers it, but what's how does it work for the multidiscipline aspect of your business?
So it's regardless of who sits in what area, it's one team. So we do whether it's mortgage broking or it's insurance or they have their own teams. So there's huddles for them huddles for all of the teams, which we do on a sort of on a Tuesday. The first half of the day on Tuesday is gone with all that stuff, so we can sort of let everyone get on with their work for the rest of the week. But they, regardless of which discipline they sit in, they are part of the greater team and attend everything as a team. They all report into Ivana, and she manages workflow and, you know, whatever issues come up with them. And to support them.
And when we're talking about workflow, we might as well get straight into the nitty-gritty of the tech stack. So maybe give us a feel for what's the technology stack that you guys are operating with, and you know, is there anything on your wish list?
Wish list, better explain. No, so we sit in the Microsoft environment. We use the Microsoft environment. So Teams is massive for us, and it just makes everything so efficient.
Because you have a few different locations these days, is that right?
Yeah.
So whereabouts are they?
So head office is Unley, and then we've got other offices in South Australia. We've got Victor Harbour, Mount Barker, and one in the Barossa Valley. And then we also have some team that are offshore in the Philippines and Sri Lanka.
And running, so on the Tuesdays, as Ben was saying, when you do your big weeklies, that's a combination of in-person and also people on using the Teams, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. So Tuesdays is our busiest day in the office because everybody likes to be together in person for these meetings, and then they break off into their workflow meetings for their pods. But, yeah, so Tuesdays is, well, everyone joins via Teams for the big team meeting. And then that breaks off into the advice team, and then from there, the individual pods go off and meet. And yeah.
And with advice production, are you using the Xplan?
We are.
Tool. Yes. Okay. Well, yeah. There's a whole other podcast series on Iris that's coming up, so we won't try and solve their issues, problems, and opportunities. But is there anything else that you plug in?
So we use Xplan a lot because why not? It does work. It's a bit slow sometimes, but if we've got it, we might as well make the most of it. We use LastPass and Wealth Central, which is available through our licensee.
And who are you licensed through?
Consultum.
Consultum. Okay. So Wealth Central has come through the Consultum, and that's from memory, that's a client-facing tool. Is that
it
correct?
It is, yeah.
So Ben, do they use that in all the meetings or reviews, these annual reviews you're talking about?
We've sort of we started implementing it into the business roughly maybe a year ago. So as it's a client facing tool. We still sort of, you know, use Xtools Plus for all of our modeling and for cash flow modeling. But it is really, it's really easy to use. The feedback from clients who are IT savvy, you're always going to have clients that still want a piece of paper, I guess. But that's been a really good way of collecting data and pushing data straight through into a CRM without human duplication. And
once it's in the CRM, Ivana, do you use Threads, or what sort of workflow management do you use?
Yeah, absolutely use Threads. It's made things so much more efficient.
Did you never used to use Threads? It sounds like this is a new thing.
We've had Threads for a couple of years. And they keep evolving. We keep adding a new thread. We think of it, you know, we realize there's a process that needs a thread. So we build a thread to cover everything. Just that way, if anyone can pick up a task and know where it's at and continue.
And with the accounting business and the mortgage broking business, they've got their own tech as well, like Xero's, MYOB's, Sales Tracker, whatever it is. The holy grail, and this, we don't have to solve everything in this particular podcast, is integrating those. How do you transfer or what information between them? Because I'm really interested because it's always a bit of a bugbear that you have to duplicate information from there. But have you guys got any sort of workarounds?
I guess we use SharePoint, and that's where everyone can access the client's data and their information, whilst the CRMs that they use don't talk to each other. We've got SharePoint, so that solves.
Oh, perfect. And Microsoft's pretty solid on the data security these days. So
it is.
Yeah. Well, now, I was just you're here, you've flown in from Adelaide. As flattered as Kieran the sound guy and I are to have you in person, You also happen to be in Sydney visiting a conference. So I wouldn't mind asking, you know, when you've got your clients and what sort of investments do you use, an SMA, do you use, you know, MDAs? It'd be good just to get a feel for how you, you know, if I'm sitting in your business, what are the tools that I have for my investment side? So first of all, what are you here for today?
So we've come up to Sydney for Dimensional's got their practice management symposium, which starts tomorrow. Always heaps of great insights, talking to other sort of other practices from around the country. So the focus, you know, Ivana and I are here because it's focused wholly on practice management, and that's sort of our wheelhouse, I guess, these days. So I guess, and I guess that relationship with Dimensional has been a pretty transformational one for the business.
When did it start?
I think we've been working with Dimensional now for almost 14 years, I think. If I'm wrong, 12 to 14 years, something like that. I guess we sort of liked their investment philosophy after coming from a very active background prior to that, and GFC coming and decimating us as hard as
everyone else,
the indexes.
Mate.
Yeah. So, you know, sort of we were all sort of expecting a lot more protection in portfolios than what we saw. So I needed to rethink the wheel on that. So we've been working with Dimensional. We run majority, you know, we have our own blends around the Dimensional strategies, and we pretty much run most client money, you know, relative to risk profile and stuff
and
that.
Do you think by taking a bit of that intellectual heavy lifting as far as sort of scaffolding off the advisors day to day, that they can be less feeling like they have to be individual fund managers and more focused on the family units?
Absolutely. I want all their time in the, you know, talking to families about what's important to them, not bedazzling them with some snippet of information from a market that they've got that ultimately, you know, could turn out to be they won't know whether through skill or luck they were right or wrong.
So now I've been going a whole year and that is the first bedazzled comment. So well done.
You're welcome.
And it took a trip across the desert to come over here and bedazzle us. And now that we've got the bedazzling out of the way in relation to Calder Wealth Management, it takes me back to the Swifty moment that happened in this city a few months ago. What I'd love to do is parlay into people and culture. And Ivana, the way I like to frame this one up is sort of ask you three barreled question. So why do people join you? Why do they stay and how do they grow? Over to you.
I think they join us probably for the same reason that I joined, that they can see that it's a business and they have a career with Calder Wealth. The reason they stay is because they're well supported, they're here to do a job and they get to do that job with a really awesome group of people who treat each other with respect but also have fun. Yeah, they come to work to do something that they really care about, that they're passionate about, and they don't have to worry about anything else. Anytime they have an issue, they come and see me. We work together, we fix it, we act really quickly.
And would you say that's your management style, sort of open door policy for comms?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, yep. So I mean, juggling a young family and a bunch of people, you're probably very used to making decisions on the run and communicating on the run. Now, tell me, is it a hybrid structure as far as I know? You've got various offices.
Yep.
But post-COVID, what does it look like to work in your business day to day?
So we do have flexible working. We've got 3 days in an office, so any one of our offices, and people can work from home 2 days a week. Advisors usually can do whatever they like. They know when they have client meetings and they'll work around that. But for the support staff, it's the 3 in an office, 2 from home. But people generally choose to be in the office more than that.
Interesting. Why do you think that is?
Because it's a good place to be. And the team collaboration that happens when everyone's physically together is awesome. And you can't get that online. But I understand. We work with the individual. So we work with each team member, what's going on with them and what, you know, their family situation is like. And so we cater for that, and some people have to leave earlier to pick up children, or they'll work in the Mount Barker office on certain days because it's closer to their kids' school and it just allows them to work.
Oh, and so you have people both. Going between offices as well. So that's a possibility in your business.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So if you're out there in South Australia and you're contemplating what to next, and you've got now all of these suburbs that you've rattled off, I'm pretending to know exactly where they are, but how far apart are they?
Well, Unley's obviously central.
Unley's the flash part of Adelaide from memory, is that right?
Yeah, very
pretty
flash.
Nice.
Very flash, very flash. Nice food and a few half-decent pubs. So, sorry, Unley and?
So, Mount Barker is in the Adelaide Hills. That's about 20, 25 minutes from the Unley office. Victor Harbour's on the Fleurieu. That's about an hour and a half, hour and 20.
About an hour.
And then Barossa Valley with the new – there's a motorway which makes it very – quick to get there now, but that is also about an hour from Unley.
Right. Well. And so can I ask, just heading off on a tangent, you recently made an acquisition which I saw on social media, and that was the Barossa Valley business, is that correct, or which one was that?
Yeah, that's the Barossa business. Yeah.
Okay, and how did that come about? I mean, Ben, did they approach you guys, or what was the...
So that business has been probably operating... predominantly life insurance and some superannuation advice, a bit of planning in there. That's been operating for probably over 30 years, and that principal was looking for a succession plan. He was the only advisor in that practice, with a few staff, similar to what we were talking about earlier, wearing a million different hats. And I guess, you know, he was wanted to transition with – we wanted to have an office. We want to cover all the bases in South Australia. And so the Principal Murray, who I've known for many years, we had a few discussions around it, and pretty quickly we worked out that we're both a pretty good fit for each other. And, so he's transitioning. We've been working at that for the last year, and he'll be sort of transitioning out into his next stage of life in just over a month's time. It's been very successful.
Awesome. So that's 1 year ago, just to clarify.
Yep.
And Ivana, did they plug day one into your operational structure, or has it been a phase in?
Well, they plugged in from day one, and then they integrated from there, learning our processes. But they sat in our environment from day one in Microsoft Teams, our Xplan. And then everyone's just worked really closely with them to help onboard them with the Call to Wealth processes and how we do things, and but also looking after their clients, bringing them in.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. And this is your first one?
Yes.
Okay. So is this a trend?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, so I tell you, the double yeses, the double yeses. So I'll come back to that in a second. Now, how do you measure? So you measure success on households. How do you measure activity? So from because you've got shared services with offshoring, okay, of which you know that I'm involved. Mm-hmm. So how do you know what's a good day for those guys? How do you know what's a good day for your associates? How do you measure things?
Again, mainly we've got sort of benchmarks, I guess, that we – not that they're things that you really need to enforce much at all. Sort of, you know, we've got, like Ivana said before, we've got an amazing team. We've got, you know, some of our senior advisors have been with us over 15 years and a lot of other staff, you know, and a lot of other staff in other roles who have been with us over 10 years. So they all work pretty seamlessly together, so they don't need to be. And we're very much a business that we say, if we need to micromanage you, this isn't the right place. We sort of employ adults and expect them to be adults. So
employ adults and expect them to be adults.
Yeah, so
it's a classic.
It's, you know, from a we I guess we have targets on, you know, roughly how many. You know, I guess starting with the households, what that looks like, obviously how many meetings that translates into, et cetera, et cetera. And all the processes are set up to run to support all of that, and we can pull whatever reporting we need to out of that as we need it.
And Ivana, in the voluminous notes that you sent through to me earlier, which is thank you very much about that, you mentioned that you do formal annual reviews with team members. How does that work in your world, and what would you advise people who are listening who potentially are just trying to get their head around managing people?
So, yeah, we do the formal annualized reviews, but we do regular check-ins. So we don't just wait for that, you know, once a year event to find out what's happening or share feedback or get their feedback. But with that annual review, we would send a pretty lengthy questionnaire out to all the team members. I think it takes them about an hour to complete.
Oh, wow.
There's lots of questions about what they think the business does well, what could the business do better, what they think they've done well, what could they do better, what are their goals for the year, how have they contributed to the business, lots of questions.
And what sort of feedback do you get? Not specifically, but do you have people who give long-form answers?
Yes. Yeah, it's varied, actually. People are very succinct in some of their answers and some people like to give very detailed answers. And in that, we also ask everyone for 360 peer feedback. So, you know, people that they work closely with, what's one thing that Ben does well, what's one thing Ben could do better.
Perfect.
And we also, in that process, ask for their goals and objectives, their 1, 3, and 5-year plan, so we know what's happening in their world, personally, professionally.
And that assists, you mentioned earlier about where they're at in their life stage and being flexible around the working environment, and, you know, some people make up time as well. So it all sort of fits hand in glove, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So after they complete that questionnaire, we collate all the answers, review it all, and then we have the review. We hold the review off-site, away from the office, so they can fully relax. And
so you've got a site in the Adelaide Hills, i.e. wine, and a site in the Barossa, i.e. wine.
Yeah,
I'm assuming you're not devoid of locations. I assume
you're noticing the trend here.
Yeah, I am. And look, Kieran, the CEO, I got next door interview these guys. We could just give them a hint and bring a cheese board and just let them fill in the gaps. How does that sound?
Yeah.
So, on that, jovial aside, what does fun look like? So say, for instance, that you got all these checks and balances and everyone's doing the right job and you achieve for the quarter or for the how do you guys celebrate?
Well, we celebrate by acknowledging all our milestones as they happen in team meetings and, you know, in Teams messages. End of financial year, we'll go out and have a team dinner. We do a team offsite with a fun activity for team bonding and we'll do a business update as well. We always celebrate Christmas in style and Friday afternoon drinks in the office. Nothing too over the top, but it's just fun and relaxed and no pressure.
And what's the total headcount of the business across all the sites?
So 18 in Australia and 6 offshore.
Okay, cool. So quite often, when we talk to our community, the Ensemble community, some people are in organisations such as yourself and some aren't. And some of them long to be in businesses such as yourself. And why that is that a lot of us were quite social creatures when we did our, went to university quite often. We did our courses. We're quite social creatures. We might have, like Ben here, we might have gone and worked for a larger corporate with lots of people. And then you went into financial planning and it becomes a very solitary game, because they're quite often very small businesses. And what I'm seeing, and you guys are a testament to that, is just the evolution of a bit of scale, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is my own personal experience, going from 0 to 10 people in your business can be just done through the charisma of the CEO. You can just write the revenue to fix problems. Going from 10 to 30 is the hardest part of the journey because you can't fix it with the tools you used to. You have to do exactly what you guys have done. You've got to invest in systems and processes, but you don't have the budget of a multinational. So everything's very much, lean management, lean thinking, jack of all trades. In saying all of that, given that you're 18 and 6, so you're 25, what's the aspiration for growing the business for yourselves? You make people do their 1, 3, and 5 years goals. In 3 years' time, where would you like to see Calder as far as headcount?
40.
Yeah, I'd say probably Ivana touched on it before. We want people to be able to, we want the advisors to give advice. That's what they enjoy doing. It's that relationship piece. Not doing any of the support work. So we need to continue to scale to support all of, all of the team in their roles. In regards to an exact number or whatever, I think, you know, we would probably be sort of double our size we are now in the next 3 to 5. That will allow us to career path more juniors through, support senior long-term staff. Scale will just allow everyone to get what they want, as well as giving all the, I guess, the benefits of a larger company, but the benefits of a smaller business, that sort of family feel of a smaller business, but with all of the, you know, ability to pay really commercially, do all the fun things, yep. You know, have all of the employee value proposition support. That's where we're going. We grow very strongly organically. We've grown to this date, to this stage organically with one tuck in, and we'll do more of those as they make sense.
We might touch on the tuck ins towards the end of the session here, but if I'm doing my maths correctly, if you want to get to sort of that 40 to 50 sort of headcount, given you've got three sort of diamond structures at the moment, does that just mean you go to six? So you've already built the foundations. Is that what you visualize, Ivana?
I think from the diamond structures, we'll move to a house team.
Oh, new words. Yeah. New one. What's a house team? Come on, we're on this journey now. You're too far gone. We have to explain what it means.
If you think about the bottom of the diamond, which is your associate advisor,
yep,
that splits out into two. So you've got a diamond top with a square bottom, like a house shape.
Gotcha.
So we bring more associates to support.
I can do stick figure drawings, so yeah. I'm following you.
Literally, like
very
matchsticks.
Well. Yeah. Correct.
Yep.
Correct. Okay. So that you've got the foundations of scalability. Okay, great. Now, and you mentioned that you've got, you know, as you get bigger, that you've got things like you can pay commercially, you know, you're in Adelaide, which is an interesting market actually, because, you know, historically Adelaide had an exodus of talent to Melbourne. A lot of young people would do that. And is that part of the strategy to try and attract not just advisors, but I think we were talking earlier, you'd love just to attract like the best and brightest for other roles, like operations, et cetera. Is that right?
Yeah, yes. We want to attract all future talent for any of the roles, associates, the support staff.
So before you head over to Melbourne, maybe just make a phone call, correct?
Yeah, you can stay in Adelaide.
Oh, there you go.
Well, I think we're sort of, you know, it is definitely becoming a bit of a vacuum from a talent point of view, and you know, sort of some of the more recent team members that have joined us, they have sort of gravitated towards us. We weren't necessarily looking for them. And I think that's, you know, I'm proud of that. And I think more and more of that will happen. And we're seeing people that are applying for roles that currently live in Melbourne and other states that are, you know, looking to move to Adelaide.
Well, that's right. I mean, if COVID's taught us anything, people have the ability to move places. And if you're living in Sydney or Melbourne and you're a young person or even Brisbane, the cost of that lifestyle that you have, especially the housing cost, can sometimes feel pretty hard to overwhelming. Correct. That's a good word. I also, when we were chatting earlier, I proudly said that, you know, one of the businesses I'm associated with Vital Business Partners had achieved B Corp, and I didn't realise that you guys are on that same journey. So maybe give me an update of where you're at and what made you do it. I mean, I know why we did it, but I'm really interested in that and against the backdrop of attracting talent.
Yeah, so B Corp's been on the cards for us for a little while, but it's a massive task to undertake.
Oh, yeah.
As you know,
yep.
That certification process is massive and it's
only in the thousands in the world. Like there's not even like hundreds of thousands. Yep. It's yep. Very, very, yep. Very hard to get.
Yes, and yeah, the process is so rigorous and you need a lot of dedication and time, and there's a lot of change that happens within the business as part of the certification, change for good. So we're probably 3/4 of the way through. We should be in a position to submit our application in about 3 months, I think.
Wow.
We'll hold you to that.
Yeah. So we've done a lot of work. I'm very excited to get that B Corp.
And I know why we did it at VBP, but what was your motivation, Ben?
So we're talking before about structure, and we're talking a lot about structure. And B Corp for, I, you know, sort of ran into B Corp years ago. I met with a firm in London, actually, and they just got B Corp accreditation. And in the US, if you're a B Corp, it's sort of other tax benefits, et cetera. But really,
if you're listening, Australian government,
yeah, get on board.
Yeah. Ring us, 555.
Give us a hand, help us. So the I guess the values align with B Corp, sort of, you know, the three P's, you know, it's about people, planet, profit, basically. And as a business, we think that aligns very well with us value-wise. And I think with structure, B Corp gives you a really good framework for making decisions around how you look at things in the world and how what policies you should have in place as a business to sort of, you know, participate and operate a business for good, not just for profit. So, and that's something Ivana's been running, and she does that. We have a, you know, a team of beekeepers in the business who work through this, and then they, it's something that the whole team is involved and has an input into as we go through this process.
And look, the payoff comes in the fact that you become uber attractive to especially younger people who these days are looking at a broad range of why they work for an organisation and the purpose of what their organisation's about. And I suppose in that vein as well, given that you have been a successful business, do you support any charities, or do you have a methodology for doing that?
Yeah, we've actually, as part of the B Corp process, we've introduced a charitable giving policy.
Cool. How's that work?
Well, we had a pool of money that will, you know, is for a donation to a charitable organisation, and the team had to pitch a charity that was close to their heart.
Awesome.
To the team, yep. to the broader team. And there were four pitches, charities put forward, and then everybody votes. We had an equal tie, so there was two winners, and so we've split that money and donated it to the two charities of choice.
Yeah, so we make a more meaningful contribution instead of, you know, we sort of focus that down, make a more meaningful contribution.
What do you mean by meaningful, Ben?
More money.
Okay, so commercially. So, look, what you've done is you've engaged your team in the process,
mm-hmm.
you know. I've spoken with and I know people who are very generous, like very generous people, but quite often it's just the CEO making a captain's call to a project, or it might have been that, but the methodology that you have, and so that's a annual methodology, you are?
Yes, that's right.
Mm. And secondary to that, we support if they want to, you know, up to a amount of money if they give to a charity, we'll match that.
Oh, wonderful.
For something that they're passionate about.
Okay, awesome. And when we're talking about your own team, because we are focusing on that, are there any shout-outs you'd like to give, or any people that have either mentored or inspired you, either inside your team or outside?
all the team, thank you. You know, you're awesome. I love you, all of you. You know, we have this dedicated group of awesome humans who sort of, you know, we're all on the same page. We all share the same values. You know, work's work, but we sort of all have a common purpose, and it's a great place. And probably personally, shout out for me, I don't know, probably Dad, I guess. I should acknowledge him. We worked together for a very long time. I learned a lot from him. A few things, not what to do, but mainly what to do.
So, Dad, if you're listening, minute 42
good on you, mate.
To minute 43 is probably the focus of this particular podcast.
You know, and he, you know, I think saw that, I guess, ability in me to pick up the baton and keep going. So, I thank him for that.
Well, that's probably one of the best, most heartfelt answers to that quite corporate question. So I thank you for your candor. You know, quite often people talk about, and the great family businesses, and they talk about, you know, it's a life, work-life balance, but sometimes that is sort of, you know, working to achieve people's goals as well. And Ivana, anyone who's mentored you?
Well, I have a few people that I lean on or reach out to when something's going on. I'll give them a call and, you know, say, this is what's happening. What would you do? Or have you come across this before? And if, to name them, they're I guess they're people that I've known for a very long time, and they're also in the industry, and that would be do I name them?
You can if you want. They're going to be listening.
Well, Debbie Rumbelow is, yeah, she's at Centrepoint, and Anna Verderami at Palladia. They're two that I reach out to a lot, and, yeah, just back and forth with each other. We help each other.
Oh, that's fantastic. You know, look, two fantastic answers to that question, and giving people some gratitude publicly is always pretty positive. I was then thinking about looking, you know, you mentioned a future state around your business, where you're looking to go. You've mentioned your ambitions of growing. You've now done your first merger or acquisition or combination of both. I think best said that you helped a friend out, Murray, from memory, do a transition, probably a transition to retirement. Is that right? Murray was...
Yep.
Yep. So you've done that. Sounds like their clients were in great hands. Sounds like you're probably being able to carry on that legacy, which I know that especially in regional or even smaller towns, not that Adelaide's a smaller town, but in those regional areas, I think it's as much about when you're selling your life's work that you want to be able to walk down the street, you know, 2 or 3 years later and not be told, yeah, thanks for nothing, champion. But yeah. So in saying that, are you looking in the next couple of years, or what's your sort of runway for growing this business?
Yesterday.
Okay. So that's the position statement from the CEO. Ivana, anything more detailed to go around that?
Open to any opportunities today.
Awesome. So we always like to talk about, you know, how Ensemble does it and community. And I think, Ben, when we were talking earlier, I asked, do you have a business coach? And you kind of paused for a moment and you said, you know what? A lot of peers, and there's a difference between peers and competitors. And the great thing about financial planning is there's a real openness of what people are doing. And that's because there's just way more clients than most we can ever get a service. Yep. Correct. Yeah. So you, I think you mentioned that you loved reaching out to some peers and them reaching out to you. And you've been on a couple of study tours, and that's been really instructive, because I'm thinking, if I'm a company who goes to all the effort of putting study tours together, it'd be great to get some feedback, some lasting feedback.
Yeah. So that's spot on. Study tours was another sort of transformational way for me. And I think you said before, you know, it can be pretty lonely, you know, in this industry. I think as a principal of a financial planning firm, it can be very isolating, and everyone looks to you for the answers, and you don't always have them. So
I was doing it for 25 years and I don't think I had one.
Yeah. Well, you played it well, Roxy. So yeah, so I've met some great, yeah, a lot of other principals from practices over the years on study tours, and there's a group of people, and if they're listening to this, they know who they are. We all have each other, not in the favourites on our phones, but not too far back, and that we can bounce ideas off of, or I'm thinking about doing this, and I'm that person for other, you know, other businesses that are a bit smaller than us and sort of want to get to where we are. And I have other people I call who have businesses bigger than us, and, you know, what problems I've got this problem and how do I solve it? And so that peer group within the industry would be my business coach, I would say. I get great value out of that, and I'm very thankful to those people for sharing, and I'm happy to share whatever I've got.
Well, if I'd like to enlighten both of you for the last period of time, this last hour you have shared, so you're giving back to the universe. And on that note, I'd love to thank Ivana for your time. I'd love to thank you for all the detail that you gave me beforehand. I'd also like to say that, and I'm going to throw this in, is that this is how efficient this lady is. So when we arrived here for our podcast, Kieran, the sound guy, she goes, the Reserve Bank is meeting today, and I have one non-negotiable task, which is I have to quickly send out a notification to our clients so that we're first and foremost in their mind. So at approximately halfway through, the alarm went ding. Ivana then went to work. Ben and I then pretended to work for 10 minutes, came back in, changed the demeanor, and back into the podcast. So that's efficiency. That's what happens. That's why businesses need good general managers, good practice managers. That's why there's always an engine room behind every great CEO. And so with that, I'd like to thank Ben for your time. I'd like to thank Ivana and on behalf of Ensemble and the engine room. Thank you.
Thanks, Roxy.
Thanks for having us.